Now I'd like to welcome Stephen Angel from the Earlham School of Religion in Indiana, who's going to talk about roots of a contemporary American Quaker crisis, tensions over the Vietnam War and the World Council of Churches among Indiana Yearly Meeting and Friends United Meeting Quakerism, 1969 to 1975.
Thank you. So we move ahead a few centuries here, a couple centuries. Indiana Yearly Meeting Orthodox was one of the yearly meetings of Friends that was greatly transformed by the Holiness Revivals of the late 19th century. Holiness Christian Friends had limited interest in any social concerns committees that were seen as part of a social gospel, and that often included traditional Friends Peace Witness. A Peace and Service Committee survey of social issues of interest the local meetings in Indiana Yearly Meeting in 1962 produced a top 10 list heavily dominated by concerns about alcohol and tobacco usage, gambling, Sabbath observance, and pornography. The only issue generally associated with the social gospel was a broad concern about race inequalities and social opportunities. Tom Hamm writes that during the last 100 years, there's reason to believe in Indiana that pacifism has become a minority position among Friends. The Vietnam War widened fissures in the yearly meeting. Most young men of draft age in the yearly meeting were not conscientious objectors. Some members of the yearly meeting openly backed the war, while others were vocal in dissociating themselves from the anti-war movement in general and liberal Quaker anti-war activists in particular. In 1948, 5 years meeting, in the 1960s it changed its name to Friends United Meeting, but in 1948, 5 years meeting was a founding member of the World Council of Churches, a fellowship of churches accepting our Lord Jesus Christ as God and Savior. And in so doing, it accepted the World Council of Churches' doctrinal basis, not as a creed, but as an affirmation of faith. The World Council of Churches and the National Council of Churches of Christ in the USA, henceforth NCC, founded 2 years later, embodied a form of ecumenism built primarily on close cooperation in the many areas for which the sponsoring denominations could find agreement. In 1965, the National Council of Churches represented more than 30 different denominations with more than 40 million members. But for many American Quakers in the Midwest, they sympathized more with evangelical holiness and Pentecostal churches that refrained from joining either body. Still, the National and World Council of Churches enjoyed great prestige in the USA in the years after their founding, including bipartisan access at high levels in the Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Lyndon Johnson administrations. In 1971, J. Robert Nelson observed that the National and World Council of Churches have been the avant-garde in taking and defending positions which were at first unpopular, but eventually came to be adopted by significant proportions or even majorities of the people and of national governments. NCC advocacy for inclusion of Communist China in the family of nations had antedated President Richard Nixon's overtures to China by more than a decade. And ecumenical denunciations of this senseless adventure, in Nelson's words, of the military conflict in Vietnam had long preceded majority opinion in the American populace against further military involvement there. The NCC and the American Friends Service Committee, among other organizations, had issued statements against the Vietnam War in 1965 and 1966, urging such measures as a ceasefire, a freeze in any further troop buildup, and negotiations to end the Vietnam conflict. At the time, it appeared that Friends in Indiana Yearly Meeting might be in harmony with such statements and actions. In 1965, the Yearly Meeting approved a statement calling for a peaceful solution to the Vietnam conflict, and a year later, it issued a similar statement. But Earlham college students. Earlham was a college, a Quaker college, sponsored by, for which Indiana Yearly Meeting had a trustee relationship. Earlham students, the NCC and AFSC on one hand, and many Indiana Yearly Meeting friends on the other hand, moved in different directions after 1966. The NCC and AFSC, as well as Earlhamites, became increasingly activist in their efforts to end the war. In contrast, a conservative patriotic tide was sweeping through rural Indiana, where many Indiana Friends churches are located. The election of a Quaker president who hailed from Evangelical Friends roots, Richard Nixon, with the outspoken support of retired Earlham professor Elton Trueblood and the votes of many Indiana Quakers, undoubtedly solidified the position of most Indiana Quakers as a part of what Nixon would call the silent majority that supported his conservative policies on such matters as the Vietnam War and urban unrest. In the fall of 1969, the NCC worked closely with the AFSC and other organizations to organize a huge anti-war demonstration held in November in Washington, D.C. In its extensive work on this event, the very different concerns held by conservative evangelical Quakers in the nation's heartland seemed to have little place. In July 1969, the Friends United Meeting Triennial Worldwide of Friends was held in Indiana at Earlham College. Two major speakers were high-level representatives of the National and World Council of Churches. The head of the New York office of the World Council of Churches addressed the poverty of the Global South and challenged Quakers to increase giving for economic development in the poorer parts of the earth. Arthur Fleming, president of the NCC, urged Quakers to follow nonviolent strategies in hastening equality between blacks and whites. Friends approved resolutions on Vietnam, Middle East, an assured minimum income as morally right, and the racial crisis in America. These resolutions would have appealed mostly to liberals. The very close timeline seems to suggest what happened next was a backlash against this triennial. Within the month of the end of the triennial, grassroots revolts against membership in the NCC and WCC were underway in the two most conservative yearly meetings in FUM, Iowa and Indiana. On August 13th, petitions were presented to Iowa Yearly Meeting requesting that Iowa Yearly Meeting withdraw from the NCC and WCC. A week later, on August 20th, Indiana Yearly Meeting minuted an informal discussion of the Indiana National and World Council of Churches that a concern had arisen that merited further attention. The Administrative Council was requested to act upon this, and the clerk, Harold Cope, in consultation with the superintendent, decided to call a special meeting for the yearly meeting on January 10th, 1970. In Indiana Yearly Meeting, the main protagonists advocating withdrawal from the NCC and WCC were 13 monthly meetings that made up the Van Wert Regional Meeting, which was comprised of Friends churches in northeastern Indiana and neighboring parts of Ohio, and according to Tom Hamm, was probably the most fervently evangelical quarter in the yearly meeting. The main antagonist arguing forcefully on behalf of remaining in the NCC was smaller Hopewell Friends meetings. An unprogrammed Quaker meeting, there were only two then part of Indiana Yearly Meeting. It had been born in the 1950s when some Quaker pacifist veterans left a church that was dominated by veterans that were very friendly to the military. In 1969, Hopewell Friends contended that much of the information in circulation about the NCC has come from dubious sources. In many instances, it has come from radical right radio programs, films, or literature directed at undermining conference in the NCC, its constituency, and its leadership. We feel very strongly that the witness made by the NCC and some areas of the social gospel has been very much in accord with the historic witness of Friends, and it merits our support, not our condemnation. Many Indiana Friends express grave doubts as to the quality and accuracy of information imparted by NCC opponents alleging communist involvement. For example, one friend called out the Council of Churches critics for relying on statements about the councils that were twisted and non-proven, as hope that our actions would be based on conscience and doctrines and not writings of other organizations which seemed to twist the statements of the people in the National Council of Churches. Council of Churches also were criticized for their involvement in controversial social issues, some of which many Indiana Friends did not support. Supporters of the Council of Churches, such as E. Raymond Wilson, then Executive Secretary Emeritus of Friends Committee on National Legislation, pointed to the great effect for good that actions of the Council of Churches had already achieved on issues of importance to Friends, pleading that the baby not be thrown out with the bathwater. He referred especially to the work of the NCC on behalf of race relations and its work helping to pass the 1904 Civil Rights Act. NCC supporters also asserted that if organizations such as the NCC were headed down the wrong path, the easiest way to remedy the situation was to work to correct it from within. Wilmer Cooper stated, "The fact is that no matter how much we may like or dislike certain aspects of the council's program and emphasis, the surest way of having some influence is not by standing outside and criticizing, but by working from within the structures of the National Council." Another criticism of the NCC was that it appeared to favor a liberal theological view. One meeting, recalling the proud holiness Christian tradition of Indiana Yearly Meeting, stated their belief that the old-time Quakers would not approve of affiliation by Indiana Yearly Meeting with the Council of Churches because their standards had been very spiritual and above reproach. On the other hand, West Milton Meeting, supporting membership in the National World Council of Churches, affirmed, "We might well benefit from examination of our basic beliefs and theology so that we might see our differences as varying manifestations of the inner light that guides our way. At the bottom, this issue was the degree of doctrinal and spiritual purity that one demanded from the organizations one supported. It was a core issue of religious identity on which it was difficult to sway Friends' views." In the called meeting in January 1970, about half of the 94 monthly meetings of Indiana Yearly Meeting were present, sent representatives. The meeting was strongly divided. About half of those present expressed an attitude of suspicion towards the National Council of Churches. Some felt strongly that, quote, "there's a communistic element in the Council of Churches and that Indiana Yearly Meeting should withdraw from them," end quote. Some churches presented signed documents from their congregations strongly for withdrawal. Some meetings had no instructions, and in fact, the meeting had been advertised as a discussion meeting only. Some meetings even gave an ultimatum that they would withdraw from the yearly meeting if Indiana Yearly Meeting did not end its relationship with the Councils of Churches. When ultimatums are used by dissatisfied monthly meetings, they pose significant problems for the good functioning of Quaker business process. Again, Hopewell Friends reflected that. "It is our judgment that this withdrawal of united support is a reversal of the usual Quaker way of making decisions. A rather drastic change is to be made because there is not complete unanimity for continuing as in the past, although the professed Quaker way is to postpone action if possible until there is a substantial degree of unanimity." Holiness Indiana, a yearly meeting Friends, however, justified the use of such ultimatums as protecting the integrity of their conscience. Advocates for the Council of Churches spoke out strongly. The Spiceland representative reported that he had told the group that there is both good and bad in the council, and we should be able to separate that which we approve from that which we disapprove without losing the vehicle which brings us the good. In the aftermath of the January meeting, 15 monthly meetings issued clear statements calling for the yearly meeting to disassociate itself from the council churches. Most came from the aforementioned Van Wert quarterly meeting, where there was a highly organized campaign against the yearly meeting's relationship with the councils of churches. In March, the Van Wert meeting sent a letter to all of the meetings in the yearly meeting announcing their decision to withhold 2.1 cents per member from their contribution to the FUM budget, which was how much was contributed to the Council of Churches, and asking other meetings to take similar action. 3 months later, the quarter took the very unusual action of asking each meeting within the quarter to take action on the matter and to send its minute, not directly to the yearly meeting, but rather to the clerk of the quarter, Albert Shoemaker, who would then forward all the minutes en masse to the yearly meeting. That leads us to the chart, which I have handed out, so I have examined about half the minutes from about half of the monthly meetings in the yearly meeting at the time. There were 94 monthly meetings, and I've seen 48 sets of minutes. The controversy was mentioned in 40 of those 48, which is a remarkable number. So everybody was mentioning it in their minutes during this period. So at the top line, you see that 15 meetings approved minutes advocating disaffiliation from the World's Council of Churches, but that they represented only, that's 16% of the meetings, but they represented less than 10% of the members. So these are mostly very small rural churches. Second line, that there are nine churches that produced minutes supporting affiliation with the National World Council of Churches, but they represented 23% of the members, 9% of the churches representing almost 23% of the members. So these are mostly large urban churches. And then there's a middle group that noted the controversy in the minutes without taking a stand either way. And that was also a pretty large group of meetings. And I suggest that these figures, incomplete as they are, portray a very divided yearly meeting, and also one in which a great deal of confusion and uncertainty existed about the various ramifications of the issues that had been raised concerning the Council of Churches. And looking for solutions, the clerk, Harold Cope, brought the matter to the Administrative Council of Indiana Yearly Meeting in February. After a long, serious discussion lasting almost 2 hours, there was no clear path forward. Cope urged continuing dialogue and asked for help. Quote, I am sure most of us are very aware that some of our differences have to do not just with the National Council issue, but with other differences in theology. The theological issue has been an undercurrent running through our yearly meeting for many, many years. I don't think any of us on Administrative Council has the right leading yet as what we should do. Eventually, a compromise solution was reached, and the fears of a separation receded. Inasmuch as the controversy affected two yearly meetings and Friends United meeting, that is both Indiana and Iowa, it made sense for the Executive Council of Friends United meeting to consider the problem at its April meeting. The Executive Council proposed that support for the Council of Churches be dropped from the FUM budget. FUM would still retain membership in the Councils of Churches, but after considerable discussion, approved that financial contributions towards that membership would be on a voluntary basis, and that meetings or persons wishing to support the Councils of Churches would have to designate their gifts for this purpose. This proved to be an acceptable compromise for both sides. In July, one of the Spencerville monthly meeting, which had opposed the Council of Churches, went on record as appreciating the voluntary support plan. Similarly, a vocal advocate for Council of Churches, Ernest Mills of Hopewell meeting, stated during the yearly meeting consideration in August that it was a momentous occasion when we can sit together and concur. It has been an answer to prayer. National Council of Churches continue to take stands in advance of member churches, including many Midwestern friends, and the latter continue to take notice. 1975 was the year that the last American troops withdrew from Vietnam, and in that year, Le Grand Monthly Meeting of Iowa Yearly Meeting protested the National Council of Churches' decision, quote, to support the civil rights of homosexuals. The inroads of the gay society are reaching a new high, and while they cannot be denied the right to live and earn a living, it is deplorable that a supposed Christian body should give approval to their support, strongly feeling that we can in no way subscribe to the decision of the National Council of Churches to support civil rights of homosexuals or any gay society activity for that matter. We prefer not to have any ties or affiliation with the National Council or any of its subsidiaries. In yearly meeting sessions in August, the Iowa superintendent was asked to protest this NCC action by forwarding the Le Grand meeting's minute to Friends United Meeting and the Iowa Council of Churches. One consequence is that Midwestern friends did not have any time to heal their divisions after the end of the Vietnam War. Instead, they moved right into a culture war, that has had many ramifications for American friends, at least until this writing. In conclusion, this paper illuminates some important patterns in interaction decision-making in Indiana Yearly Meeting. It reveals that certain of the smaller meetings with fundamentalist leadings, mostly country churches with pretty small memberships, relentlessly pursued any Quaker or other Christian body with which Indiana Yearly Meeting had involvement. One tendency was to lay down ultimatums, which, as has been suggested, may manipulate the Quaker business process. The advocates for these programs deemed to be liberal have been a shifting set of meetings. For example, by 2000, the Hopewell meeting, which I've talked about, the unprogrammed meeting, had left Indiana Yearly Meeting entirely and joined Ohio Valley Yearly Meeting, a Hicksite yearly meeting, or which a Friends General Conference yearly meeting in Indiana. Advocates for the Council of Churches and other programs deemed to be liberal have been less resolute in their confrontation of their opponents. With a few exceptions, moderates sought reconciliation with the complaining meetings and did not have the stomach for a confrontation to preserve full yearly meeting backing for these organizations. And when the moderates offered small concessions, in this case a new financial scheme that made donations to these liberal organizations, a voluntary rather than mandatory, the Holiness Christians happily accepted these concessions, then casting a vigilant eye over the rest of the yearly meeting activities to ascertain what their next target would be. The point to be made here is simply that the controversy over the National and World Council of Churches was neither the first nor last of this kind of controversy, but simply in the annals of Midwestern Friends, one of a long series. And a comprehensive history of this string of controversies has yet to be written.
Any comments or questions?
If I could relate this, what you've been saying, to what's happened earlier today, can I ask about numbers? Was it the more moderate or more liberal meetings or the more conservative ones that tended to grow and attract new recruits? Is there a difference that you can discern in this?
There have been rather sharp declines among all the meetings in Indiana Yearly Meeting, both liberal and conservative.
Okay.
I was wondering whether this situation of voluntary support for National Council of Churches and World Council of Churches still applies.
It still applies. However, it also didn't quite work as advertised. One of the features of the April 1970 minute of the Executive Board of Friends United meeting was that the yearly meetings would then send out a solicitation to all their meetings, inviting them to do this voluntary support. The Friends United meeting staff followed up in August with the superintendent of Indiana yearly meeting, and he said, you know, if we implement this part of the board minute, we'll just stir up the hornet's nests all over again. There became the upshot was that there were great problems in raising the money, and they had to do extraordinary things. Had to have separate lists of meetings that would like to appeal and put an article in Quaker Life or something appealing for these funds.
And yet the odd thing is that for the last 14 years, FUM has had a representative on the Central Committee of the World Council of Churches.
Right, yeah. So the amount, the 1970 amounts were $500 for the National Council of Churches, $500 for World Council of Churches and $900 for the National Council of Churches. So that's $1,400. It probably wasn't going to make or break the budget for either council.
I'm aware that the official cutoff point of your paper is 1975, but just as a point of curiosity for what happened after this period, I'm wondering which of the controversies you have been describing has continued. For example, does the war controversy continue beyond this period, or does it simply die down after the Vietnam War? And B, I imagine that the homosexuality issue is still red hot.
That's correct. One thing that made the Vietnam War issue so controversial was the existence of conscription, a draft, in the 1960s. And one other thing that happened in 1975 was that the conscription law was ended. The wars, the first Gulf War and then the second Gulf War and denouncing homosexuality in terms. And then that, for many of these conservative evangelical holiness congregations, that minute became a central part of their identity, even though it's not included in faith and practice, for example. And that minute was approved over objections of Friends in 1982 on the floor, so it was not a unanimous minute, but it still made it into the meeting minutes. Then it continued in the 1990s. There were controversies between the Indiana Yearly Meeting, which didn't appreciate that Earlham College was, gay and lesbian students were being fully included and welcomed on the campus. And eventually the Yearly Meeting dropped its Earlham trusteeship. And then in the past 5 years, the issue has been the meeting closest to Earlham, which many Earlham professors attend, West Richmond, which adopted a affirming and welcoming minute for gays and lesbians. The yearly meeting said no, and Afghanistan have certainly had their share of issues, but one of those issues was not young men from the Midwest being drafted into the military. So that's one difference with that. But in fact, with the issues in terms of gays and lesbians, in Indiana Yearly Meeting, it only escalated in succeeding years. In about 1980, there was a small meeting called West Elkton. A woman in the meeting, you can't do that. West Richmond meeting said, sorry, we don't have a leading to change our minute. So next month, still next month, in July, there will be a formal separation ratified in Indiana Yearly Meeting between 44 meetings that say the yearly meeting has the authority to tell the monthly meeting not to welcome and affirm gay and lesbian members, and about 15 meetings that say the yearly meeting does not have that authority.
Thank you.
I'm intrigued by your mention of support for Richard Nixon amongst Quakers, and I wondered whether he was known as an active Quaker or was it through family connections? And secondly, after Watergate, what was the feeling amongst his supporters when all of that came out?
Well, in regard to your first question, I might have answered in a different way, say, last month or a month before. But there's a wonderful article out in Quaker History by a recent Earlham graduate, Isaac May, that I recommend. And Isaac May's point, is that really, you know, when you come right down to it, Nixon was seen by evangelical friends, at least up, as you point out in the second part of your question, up to Watergate, as really an exemplary evangelical friend. There was this dynamic, curious dynamic during the Vietnam War period of all these liberal, mostly unprogrammed Quaker meetings on the East Coast, deluging Nixon's meeting in East Whittier meeting in California with petitions for him to be disowned for his war activities. And but, you know, not only his meeting, but Isaac May argues really, you know, all the Midwestern and Western pastoral friends really staunchly stood up with him, you know, for, you know, the great majority of his presidency, including Elton Trueblood, you know, who had a monthly column in Quaker Life. Elton's support was broken only in 1973 when Nixon released the tapes. And there were a lot of bad words on the tapes. So that gave Trueblood an out. Andrew Harvey and I were discussing this yesterday, and I thought Andrew made a good point. He said, "Well, for Trueblood, Nixon's honesty have been an issue?" And my response was, I think by referring to Nixon's use of curse words, it was generally intended to be a statement of what Trueblood and actually Billy Graham, the evangelist, made the same decision at the same time. It would have been a reflection by both Trueblood and Graham that they had problems with Nixon's integrity and honesty, but the turning point for neither Trueblood and Graham happened with any of the bombing during the Vietnam War, prior to the Paris Peace Agreement in January 1973. That wasn't the issue for them.
Thank you. I think we're running out of time, so please join with me in thanking Steve very much.